and his party of no goods pressed on, never leaving the westward trail. They had lost the trail, but were all convinced that Preacher was heading for Fort Henry on the Yellowstone. It was the only logical thing for him to do. South was very rugged country. A dozen miles to the south, Preacher and his pilgrims sat it out until the snow was completely gone. By that time, everyone was well rested, including the horses. Preacher had listened to Edmund bitch about his head cold until he knew if they didn't get on the trail, he was really going to give Edmund something to complain about, like maybe a poke on the snoot. "Back it up," Preacher told him. "We got about 100 miles to go." Preacher led them straight south toward Teton Pass. His plan was to take them through the pass, then cut more to the west, leading them through the Caribou Range, staying north of the Great Dry Lake, some called Gray's Lake, cross the Blackfoot Mountains, then on into Fort Hall. That was his plan. But in Indian country, plans were subject to change. Once clear of Teton Pass, Preacher cut southwest and pushed his party hard. They were becoming used to the trail, and Richard had become a fair hand. Preacher began ranging far out in front of them whenever he felt it safe to do so. Safe was his being fairly sure Richard would stay on the trail Preacher fords and not get the others lost. He tried to stay apart from the group as much as possible, for Melody had once more begun speaking to him and batting her blues and shaking her bottom at him. Damn woman was about to drive him nuts. Bum and his bunch had found themselves smack in the middle of a Blackfoot uprising. A friendly bannock had told them the army was warning all people to leave the area north of the upper curve of the Snake. And the bannock also had told them that everybody was gone from Fort Henry until the Blackfoot had been settled down. They'd been gone for several weeks. He knew that for a fact, because he'd been there. "Tricked us," Bum said. "He cut south during the snow and holed up until it melted before pulling out. That has to be it." "Then we're out of luck on this run," Jack said. "No way we can make Fort Hall before they do." Bum thought about that while he was warming his hands over a small fire. "You know where Red Hand is?" "Yeah, but you ain't thinking of trusting that crazy renegade, is you? I don't see that we got a whole lot of choice in the matter. With his bunch, and with us maybe picking up 8 or 10 other old boys, we could take on any wagon train. We could hit them anywheres between Fort Hall and Oregon Territory." "I don't like it. Why would Red Hand even want to join up with us?" Bull asked. "For prisoners and booty. We could make a deal with him. He will keep his word on certain things. I've worked with him before and always been careful not to try to rook him. We can pick our spot once they leave Fort Hall, because there ain't no army forts along the way until you get to Oregon Territory. And I think them's all British, far as I know. And them silly people don't worry me none. Hell, they'll stop and drink tea right in the middle of a damn battle." "Them women we've been chasing might get killed," Keyes pointed out. "And they might not. Besides, all the gold them Bible toters is carrying will make up for the women."
"True," Moses said.
"So what do we do?" Slug asked. "Get our butts out of Blackfoot country first thing. When that's done, we head south to find Red Hand and his bunch and to find us some more old boys that we can trust. When we talk to him, we don't mention nothing about the gold or the women we're after. Luke, the Preacher know you?" "No, I ain't never laid eyes on the man." "Then you'll be the one to ride into Fort Hall and find out what wagon train them pilgrims is leaving with. We'll be camped about 15 miles southeast of the fort, down close to the Port Noose. That's where Red Hand hangs out. Let's get the hell gone from here. I don't want to tangle with no damn Blackfeet."
2 days from the fort, Preacher told the group.
"And then I'll be shut of you," he silently added. "Praise be. We'll stop at a creek just before we make the fort and you ladies can bathe and whatever and change back into them dresses you toted along. Howsomever, it's going to be right difficult for y'all to ride proper-like in them saddles."
"We want to pay you for all your troubles," Edmund said. Preacher fixed him with a bleak look.
I did what I done because it was the right thing to do. So don't you be trying to hand me no money. I don't want your damn money. I just want to get shut of you, and I hope I don't ever see none of you again. I feel bounden to see you hooked up with a wagon train, and I'll do that. Then I'm gone.
Where will you go, Preacher? Penelope asked.
Now that salvation, in the form of less cretinous people, was near, she felt it wouldn't hurt to be at least cordial to the man. To a degree. Don't know. Fern's about played out. I can see that while most of the others can't. But I'll tell you what I ain't gonna do. I ain't gonna guide no goddamn wagon trains full of pilgrims. He would live to eat those words, without benefit of salt, pepper, or anything else, and a lot sooner than he could possibly know. Preacher had tucked them all in a natural depression off the trail. The fire was built against a huge rock, so the rock would reflect the heat back to the group. They were running out of supplies, and Preacher had not wanted to risk a shot bringing down a deer and had not been able to get close enough to one to use an arrow. He had managed to snare a few rabbits, and that was what they were having this evening.
A pâté would be wonderful, Penelope said, holding a rabbit's leg.
Yes, Edmund agreed, or one of your mother's wonderful meat pies. Preacher rocked back on his heels and gnawed at his meat.
I dream of being warm again, Melody said. The luxury of sitting in a chair, snug and warm by the stove, and reading poetry while the elements rage outside the window.
Stimulating conversation over tea and cookies, Richard said.
Luxuriating long in a hot soapy bath, Penelope said. She gingerly took a dainty little bite of rabbit.
Preacher broke the bone and sucked out the marrow. He muttered under his breath.
I beg your pardon, Edmund inquired.
Nothing, Preacher said, reaching over and slicing off a hunk of rabbit. He tensed only slightly as an alien sound came to him. He shifted position and continued to eat, but he had moved closer to his saddle and the extra brace of pistols. The move also put his back to a large rock. The others did not seem to notice. Preacher glanced over at the horses. They had stopped grazing and were standing very still, their ears all perked up. Preacher ate the last of his meat and then picked up a handful of snow that remained on the shady side of the small boulder. He rubbed the snow on his hands to clear away the grease and used more snow to wipe the grease from his mouth. He dried his hands on his breeches and wiped his mouth with his jacket sleeve. Free of the odor of grease, he took a deep breath. He picked out the tangy odor of old wood smoke. There was no way he could tell by smell what tribe the Indians were from, but he'd bet $10 they were Blackfeet. And there wasn't no fiercer fighters anywhere, unless it was Red Hand and that bunch of half-crazy renegades that run with him. But this was just a tad north for Red Hand, although Preacher had once run into Red Hand a hell of a lot further north than this. This bunch was slipping up from behind Preacher. To the front was clear, as was to his left. He stretched and scooted back another foot or so, putting himself in the shadows. Using as little movement as possible, he slowly eased both his pistols from his sash and cocked them. The pilgrims were busy discussing poetry and the latest fashions back east. Preacher figured this was a mighty small bunch of Injuns. If they'd had any size to them at all, they'd have already attacked and done the deed. These were probably young bucks, out to take some hair so they could impress the girls back at the village. Richard, Preacher said in a soft whisper. The man cut his eyes to Preacher while the others kept talking, unaware of any trouble. Real easy like now. Without you saying a word, you put your hand on the butt of your pistol and be ready to jerk and cock and fire.
What? What? Edmund said. What's this about discharging a weapon?
Penelope jumped up.
Are we under attack? She screamed.
Melody looked up just as braves came leaping into the camp. She jumped to her feet and let out a shriek that would put a mountain lion to shame.
Preacher put two bucks on the ground and crippled a third when he fired his pistols. Both of them double-shotted. He grabbed up his second brace and let them roar. His left-hand gun was a clean miss, and his right-hand gun misfired. Richard fired the ball, catching a brave in the stomach and stopping them cold. The missionary stood rock still for a second, looking at the gore he'd caused, then vomited down the front of his coat. Preacher was on his feet, his long blade knife at the ready when a buck came screaming at him, a war axe in his hand. Preacher sidestepped the blow from the axe and cut the buck across the back, from his shoulder down to his buttocks, the big blade slicing deep. The Indian screamed and rolled on the ground, coming to rest near Penelope. He reached out and clamped one hand around her ankle. Medmen picked up a rock about the size of a grapefruit and smashed the buck on the head, cracking his skull. Preacher jumped for his hawken and cocked it, leveling the .54 caliber rifle just as a brave leaped at him. At point-blank range, he fired. The ball struck the Indian in the center of his chest and turned him in midair. He was dead when he hit the ground. "Reload, goddammit!" Preacher yelled, dropping the rifle and hurriedly trying to charge his pistols. "Edmund, see to the horses!" A brave leveled his bow and Melody screamed at Preacher. Preacher threw himself to one side, and the arrow whizzed past him, embedding into a tree. Preacher charged the lone brave and clubbed him with his pistol, smashing his head on the way down. Edmund never made it to the horses. He was on the ground, unconscious, and a Blackfoot was grappling with Richard. Richard was holding on to the buck's wrists. "Kick him in the parts, Richard," Preacher yelled. The Blackfoot kneed Richard in his groin, and the man went down, moaning. Melody grabbed up a burning brand from the fire and jammed it against the Indian's arm. He screamed in pain and slapped her in the face, knocking her down. Preacher leveled his pistol and fired, the ball striking the brave in the head and doing terrible damage to the man's face, tearing away part of his jaw and slamming the man to the ground. A young buck, armed with only a war axe, took a vicious swing at Preacher. Preacher clubbed him with the butt of his hawken just as another brave jumped onto Preacher's back, screaming his defiance. He tried to ride Preacher down. Preacher flipped the brave off his back. The buck hit the ground, rolled, and came to his feet just in time to receive the full length of Preacher's knife in his belly, the cutting edge up. Preacher jerked the knife upward, the heavy blade ripping through stomach and into lung and heart. The Blackfoot was dead before he stretched out on the cold ground. The fight was over. If there were any more Blackfeet, they decided their medicine was bad this night and vanished back into the timber. Edmund was getting to his feet with the help of Penelope, and Melody was trying to get Richard to his feet. Richard wasn't having any part of that. He lay on the ground in a fetal position, moaning, both hands holding his privates. Preacher reloaded his pistols, then his rifle. He walked over to Edmund and looked at the man. The missionary had a lump on his noggin, but other than that was unhurt. Melody's face was red and swelling where the brave had smacked her. She'd have a pretty good bruise there come the morning. Penelope pointed to the dead Indians. "What are we going to do with them?" "We're not doing nothing with them," Preacher told her. "We're packing up and getting the hell gone from here. Injuns will come back for them." He shook his head. "Injuns must really have their dander up to attack at night. They don't usually do that." "Why?" Edmund asked, fingering the knot on his head. "Most tribes believe that if they're killed at night, the spirit wanders forever. Some believe that if the body is not recovered and properly buried, the spirit wanders." Preacher inspected each of the dead braves. "All young men." "Mosquitoes," he said. "I beg your pardon," Richard said, finally able to get to his feet. He was still all hunched over. "Pack up. I'll tell you while we pack. We got to get gone from here, people. Them Blackfeet'll be back, bet on that. Get busy, move." Preacher began rolling his blankets. He said,
Each tribe has several warrior societies. These here Blackfeet are in the Middle Society. That's reserved for young men between the age of 19 and 23. They're called Mosquitoes. The one they're in before that is called the Doves. Them's all boys between 15 and 18. That's how they learn to be warriors. These bucks got so excited about attacking us they forgot their teachings. Preacher started saddling up, leaving the others to finish packing.
How far do we ride tonight? Melody asked. I'm really very tired.
I don't know that I can ride, Richard said. You'll ride, and you'll all ride just as far as we dare push it, Preacher told the group. Unless you'd rather be dead. People, I don't think this was just a chance attack. Something's got the Blackfeet all riled up and they're on the warpath. We all best close up the distance between us and the fort. Now stop flapping your gums and get to work. I got things to do myself that might buy us some time.
Preacher went to work dragging all the bodies to the center of the camp and lined them up neatly. He put their war axes on their chests and tidied up as best he could.
Whatever in the world are you doing? Richard asked, eyeballing the work. Showing them Blackfeet they'll sure come back here this night that these here bucks fought bravely, and we all respect them for it. We'll leave the rabbits cooking on the spit and some of the supplies we got left we'll set out for them. I'll arrange it so's they'll know it's an offering. Injun set a mighty lot of store by that. It might not help us, but then again, it might. You just never can tell about Injuns. It's best to cover all your bets out here.
He looked at the fat rabbit cooking on the spit. Preacher smiled and reached out and tore off a hunk and popped it into his mouth. He chewed thoughtfully for a moment.
We don't want them to think we're too respectful, though.
9. When they finally stopped and made a cold camp, Preacher figured it was about near midnight, and he had him a group of tired but weary pilgrims. They were all asleep moments after crawling into their blankets. Preacher checked his pistols and his hawken and wrapped up in his buffalo robe, his back to a tree. He would sleep there, and sleep very lightly. Just before he closed his eyes, Preacher reminded himself that he'd better stock up on copper caps for his rifle at Fort Hall. He slept well, but lightly, and was up long before the others. He made a small fire and used up the last of their coffee. With the distance they'd traveled during the night, Preacher figured to see the walled stockade called Fort Hall by late that afternoon, providing the Blackfeet didn't make another appearance. Richard rolled out of his blankets and joined Preacher by the small fire.
Not far now, right, Preacher?
As the crow flies, just about 2 hours. It'll take us 8 or 10. Did I teach y'all anything out here, Richard?
Richard smiled and poured a tin cup full of coffee. More than any of the others will probably ever admit. At least to you.
This is the last of the coffee?
That's it. Enough for everyone to have a cup and then some. We're sitting right on the western slope of the Blackfoot Mountains. The snake makes a big curve not too far ahead. We'll cross it, and then about 10 miles further, there's a creek where the ladies can bathe and get all gussied up. I know a spot where there's plenty of privacy. After that, it's the fort.
Richard studied the man for a moment, peering at him over the rim of his cup.
He'll be glad to be rid of us, won't you, Preacher?
The mountain man sighed.
Tell the truth? Yeah, I will. We've been lucky, missionary. I can't tell you just how lucky we've been. Y'all must have God riding on your shoulders. This ain't no place for pilgrims.
Maybe God sent you to us, Richard suggested.
Doubtful, Preacher said with a shake of his shaggy head. I ain't set foot in a church in now 25 years.
Of course you have, Preacher.
All this,
he waved a hand at the lonesome splendor, is God's work. His cathedral.
My word, but I can feel his presence out here more strongly than I ever experienced it in my life.
Are you a minister?
Yes, but not a practicing one. I graduated seminary, but administration is my field.
Edmund is the one who was called. How much money are you carrying, Richard?
We're each carrying several thousand dollars. Preacher whistled softly.
That's a fortune. Don't let no one on the train know you're toting that much. But now you're going to have to use some of it to get outfitted. You know that, don't you?
We have a fund for that purpose. Don't worry.
I'll help you choose the mules, if they got any at the fort. Some folks prefer oxen, but I'll take a big red over an ox any day. It'll be easier going for y'all over the others. You ain't trying to haul no heavy family heirlooms. As I'm sure you've seen coming out here, the trail is littered with possessions folks tried to bring along and was forced to leave along the way. Once you leave the fort, Richard, y'all is on your own. There's damn little tween here in the Blue Water. Miles and miles of nothing but wilderness and Injuns and bears and puma and danger. But you folks is toughened up considerable. You'll make it, I'm thinking.
After we leave the fort, how far to the next settlement?
Fort Vancouver. Unless there's others built that I don't know about. Long, long way. I keep hearing about a mission of some sort that was built up near where the Snake and Columbia meet. In the Blue Mountains. But I ain't talked to nobody yet that's been there and seen it. So don't count on it. The others began rising stiffly from their blankets, and Preacher noted with some amusement that they were a bedraggled-looking bunch. A lot of the haughtiness had been drained right out of them. The wilderness can do that to folks who try to fight it. You can't fight the wilderness. You gotta work with it. You gotta know the rules and stick by them. But men and women and whole families was pushing west, and they was bringing their civilized eastern ideas out into the wilderness. That's why so many people was already buried alongside what was being called the Oregon Trail. And they'd be hundreds, maybe thousands more buried along the way before it was all said and done, Preacher figured. Preacher noticed that the hands of the ladies was all cut and dirty and the nails broken, but that was all right. It showed the females had toughened, and that's what it took to make it out here. And they'd get tougher before they reached Oregon Territory. They'd either get tougher mentally and physically, or they'd die. And that was all there was to it. Preacher watched as the ladies poured coffee and sat down quite unladylike by the fire. They just plopped down on their rear ends. He hid his smile as Penelope reached out and tore off a leg from one of the rabbits he'd snared during the night and was now cooking over the fire. It wasn't quite done, but she didn't seem to pay that no mind. Melody, too, ripped off a hunk of meat and fell to gnawing, eating with her fingers. Even Prissy Pants Edmund was eating with his fingers, just like he'd been doing it all his life, and it was the natural thing to do. And maybe it was, Preacher thought. None of us was that far removed from the dog-eat-dog ways of our ancestors, and it sure didn't take a body long to fall back on those ways. He'd missed these folks. He admitted that to his mind. It had been right pleasant to have folks to palaver with, at least part of the time. And Preacher was some sorry he hadn't taken Melody into the blankets for a night or two. But that would have only complicated things, and he'd probably have never gotten shed of her if he'd done that. She'd make someone a good wife, but that someone would not be Preacher. She lifted her blues and looked at him across the fire. She reached out and cut off a hunk of meat and offered it to him. He nodded his thanks and took the offering. Preacher ate the rabbit and then abruptly left the fire and walked to his horses, holding the bit of his good riding horse under his coat to warm it before he tried to put it in Hammer's mouth. How'd you like to have an ice-cold hunk of steel jammed into your mouth? He spoke to his horses for a moment, then saddled up Hammer and fixed the frame on his pack horse.
He glanced back at the forlorn-looking group. 15 minutes, people, then we ride.
The day turned warm and pleasant. The miles passed quickly and uneventfully, and by the time Preacher led the group up to the creek several miles from the fort, he figured the water would be plenty warm enough for a bath. For the others, not for him.
Y'all go, he told them. I'll stand watch.
Before the women did anything, they shook out their dresses and hung them up on bushes to get some of the wrinkles out. Then they peeled right down to the skin and hit the water, rag and soap in hand. Preacher hadn't heard such giggling and carrying on in his life. Richard and Edmund wasn't no better. They was ducking and ducking each other, and altogether the whole bunch was acting like a gaggle of school kids. Be a hell of a time for a bunch of Blackfeet or Arapaho to show up. The pilgrims showed up about 45 minutes later, looking a whole hell of a lot better than the last time Preacher had seen them. The men was all duded out in suits and white shirts and ties, and the women was gussied up to the nines. Then damned if the men didn't grunt and strain and work to arrange the women proper on the saddle, with one leg hooked around the horn. Ain't that uncomfortable? Preacher asked.
I will not ride into the fort astride this mount like some common whore, Penelope said.
Nor will I, Melody echoed.
If we have to make a run for it, y'all are going to fall off smack on your behindies, Preacher told them.
We shall cross that river when or if the need arises, Penelope informed him.
Oh my God,
Preacher pointed, jumped about a foot off the ground, let out a wild whoop and ran for his horse.
Injuns, he squalled.
Penelope and Melody jerked up their skirts and undercoats, exposing some right shapely ankles and knees and a lot of milky white skin that was further up and wasn't never seen by no man, and was astride their horses before Preacher could reach Hammer. Preacher laid down on the ground and kicked his feet up in the air and hoo-hawed with laughter.
Fooled you,
Preacher said, wiping the tears from his eyes.
That was a right good sight to see, ladies.
You, sir, are no gentleman, Penelope said.
Preacher chuckled, getting to his feet.
No, I reckon I ain't. I've been called a lot of things, but never no gentleman.
He looked up the little valley.
Oh, shit.
He hollered, leaping onto Hammer's back. Come on, people, rake them cayuses. Here comes a whole passel of engines. Move, damn it, this ain't no joke.
Now see here, sir, Edmund protested. I must insist that this sophomoric behavior you are displaying cease immediately. It's crude and disgusting. You are frightening the ladies, and I...
He looked behind him as a wild, savage yell reached his ears. His eyes widened.
Son of a bitch!
The missionary bellowed and kicked his pony in the slats. About 100 braves were thundering toward the creek, their war cries and the pounding of hooves filling the warm spring air.
Stay on the trail, Preacher hollered. It'll lead you straight to the fort.
He made sure the others were ahead of him and wheeled Hammer, cocking his hawken and bringing it to his shoulder. He compensated for the distance and squeezed off around. The ball struck a lead rider and knocked him off his pony and under the hooves of the other hard-running horses. If he wasn't dead when he hit the ground, the hooves finished him. Preacher gave Hammer his head and the horse took off like a shot from a cannon. Hammer didn't like the sound of those wild screaming engines no better than Preacher. And the pack horse, light loaded now, after weeks on the trail, was keeping up all his own. He didn't like what was coming up behind him either. Preacher tied the reins on the horn, turned in the saddle, and pulled his other hawken from the boot, booting the empty rifle.
Give me a nice steady run, old hoss, Preacher said, so's I'll know when to pull this trigger.
The horse seemed to understand and steadied down. Preacher let the muzzle wag up and down a few times to get the rhythm of it, then fired. He hit a horse right in the head and the animal dropped, creating the biggest pile-up Preacher had seen in many a year.
Sorry, hoss, Preacher muttered.
and must have lost the rhythm. He turned around in the saddle, but not before he saw a dozen or more Injuns all crippled up and sprawled around both sides of the trail after their mounts piled up.
"The fort!" he heard Edmund shout. After a couple of miles of hard riding, Preacher put the reins in his teeth and pulled out both 50-caliber pistols and let them bang to warn those in the fort that trouble was coming hard on the hoof. The gate swung open and they were inside.
"Yeehaw!"
Preacher heard the call just as he was jumping from his horse. He grinned and turned around to face a grizzled mountain man looking to be much older than he was. A huge bear-like man dressed all in skins and fur lumbered toward Preacher.
"Preacher, you old hoss, you bring all this trouble down on us."
The defenders of the fort, more civilians than soldiers, were on the ramparts, blasting away at the attacking Indians. Most of the Indians were armed only with bows and arrows, and the guns of the defenders were swiftly driving them back. But all knew that come the night, it would be a much different story. For the Indian was a master at stealth.
"Wah!"
Preacher shouted. "Gray Bull, you old bear, you, how come you ain't down at the Poposia?" The two men bear-hugged each other while the pilgrims looked on. The battle raged around them, and these two were behaving as if nothing were happening. Gray Bull held Preacher at arm's length.
"Did you find these poor lost children in the woods?"
he asked, glancing at the four missionaries. "Wagon train attack over across the Tetons," Preacher said. "The good Lord delivered them into my hands." Gray Bull glanced at the nattily dressed men.
"You should have throwed them back. What are they?"
"We are under attack, gentlemen," an army officer shouted at the men. "We must defend this post."
"Ah, oh, keep your britches on," Gray Bull told the young man. "This ain't nothing. Wait till the night comes. Then you'll see trouble looking you in the face."
"Wild Indians do not attack at night," the young officer said. Gray Bull and Preacher grinned at each other.
"He's new out here," Gray Bull explained. "He knows everything there is to know about Injuns. Just ask him. He graduated from Sandhurst." "Do tell. What's a Sandhurst? Some fancy soldier school. Teach 'em how to walk nice and give orders in a military manner."
"I say, sir," Richard butted in. "My companions and I survived an attack on our wagon train. What happened to your ear, sir?" the officer asked.
"Injuns cut it off," Preacher told him. "He was defending the honor of these ladies here."
"Oh, I say now," the officer beamed. "That was gallant of you, sir. I'll have the post surgeon take a look at it."
"No need," Preacher told him. "It's all healed up now. I fixed it good."
"Indians are breaking off, sir," a soldier yelled from a lookout tower. "They're fleeing."
"Fleeing?" Gray Bull asked. "They'll be back come the night," Preacher told the young officer. "Mighty young soldier boys," he remarked, looking all around him. "Why, there ain't a one of 'em dry behind the ears."
"The Injuns are fleeing?" Gray Bull muttered. Penelope batted her eyes at the young officer, and he about melted down in his boots.
"Where's the regular army?" Preacher asked. "Hell, these ain't nothing but kids."
"We are British troops, sir," the officer said, "and I am in command, Lieutenant Jefferson Maxwell Smith at your service. The troops who were garrisoned here were transferred west to Oregon Territory."
"Any of you ever been in a war?" Preacher asked.
"Only a few minor skirmishes like the one we just repelled, sir."
"You didn't repel nothing, boy. Them Injuns'll be back come tonight. You best double the guards and keep a sharp eye out, or they'll be coming over these walls."
"Indians do not attack at night, sir." Jefferson Maxwell Smith stood his ground.
"You in for a big damn surprise, boy," Preacher told him. "Whether they attack at night depends entirely on how they feel their medicine is working. If their medicine is good, they'll attack."
"You are wrong, sir. They fleed," Gray Bull said.
"The Injuns fleed. I got to remember that," Tell Dupree about how the engines fled.
Incredible, Maxwell Smith said, looking at the huge mountain man.
They're going to be fleeing back here in about 3-4 hours, Preacher said.
Come on, Gray Bull. Let us flee over yonder to the sutler's store for a drink of whiskey.
Sure won't be time for drinking tonight, Gray Bull said. Not once them engines flee back at us.
Come, ladies, the lieutenant said to Penelope and Melody. Let's see about making you comfortable in quarters. I assure you, you are quite safe here. The savages have gone and will not return.
They fleed, Gray Bull said.
Yeah, Preacher said. Right over that damn hill yonder to make more medicine.
10. At the settler's store, a dark and crowded low-beamed building, the men each ordered a cup of whiskey and settled down at a table.
So how you been, Preacher? Gray Bull asked. I ain't put eyes on you. How long?
2 years.
Sounds about right. I think it was over on the Powder, wasn't it?
I believe so. About the time Lazy Bob got scalped by them renegades of Red Hand.
Preacher drank his whiskey down and chuckled. They jerked Lazy Bob's hair off his head so fast they didn't even check to see if he was dead. He run into Red Hand about a year later. It scared that engine so bad Red Hand turned around and run screaming off into the woods.
Preacher got Gray Bull another cup of snakehead whiskey and sipped on his first one.
Bring me up to date on the engine's uprising. Don't nobody seem to know what kicked it off, but the Blackfeet is damn sure on the warpath. We got 3 wagon trains backed up here and the wagon master's done quit on 2 of them. The one bossing the 3rd one is about to quit. 1 train already tried to get through this spring, didn't none of them make it. I led the party out to what was left of it. Terrible sight to see.
You scouting for the army now?
Gray Bull shrugged his massive shoulders.
Got to do something. Beaver's about gone. I notice your pack horse ain't carrying no heavy load of pelts.
Sure ain't, Preacher said morosely, looking down into his cup.
You like scout work? It beats starving to death.
I reckon.
What you planning on doing, Preacher?
I ain't made up my mind. But I ain't gonna work for that damn kid lieutenant bossing this garrison.
Grable, that youngster ain't got no sense. He got some growing up to do for a fact. And out here, he'll either do it quick or get dead.
Yeah, but how many others is going to get killed with him?
There were a lot of Flathead Indians and some Mandans living close to the fort, but they had long since been tamed and posed no threat to anyone. The Methodist Church had sent missionaries several years back, in April of 1934, with Nat Wyeth's 2nd expedition. The mission of the church was to find the Flathead Indians and to live with them and wrest the heathen nation from the clutches of Satan. It had proved to be a major undertaking. Preacher knew several of the Flatheads and squatted down to palaver with them about the Blackfoot uprising. Both the Flatheads and the Nez Perce were, for the most part, friendly to the white men, and neither tribe cared for the warlike Blackfeet. It will be very bad before it is better, a Flathead told Preacher. The young man directing the soldiers is brave but foolish.
We agree on that, Preacher told him.
The Blackfoot say they are going to drive the Bostons out of this area. Both the Nez Perce and the Flatheads called the trappers and mountain men Bostons, since many of the pelts were sold to Boston-based companies.
They ain't done it yet.
Preacher walked the sturdy walls of the fort, and they were stoutly constructed. That was due to the efforts of one Nathaniel J. Wyeth, who, back in 1934, after being treated very rudely by Fitzpatrick and Sublett of the Rocky Mountain Fur Company, moved on to the Snake River bottom and walled in what is called Fort Hall. The timbers were cottonwood, very close set, and stood 15 feet high. He built bastions, a log storehouse, and many cabins. that troops were here was a surprise, for the garrisoning of troops at company forts, while not rare, was not customary. Well, even green troops were better than nothing, although not by much in Preacher's mind. He walked outside in the waning light and shook his head at the slapdoodle manner in which the wagons were placed. Idiots, he said, you can't tell a pilgrim nothing. He stalked around the wagons until he found the one remaining wagon master and confronted the man. Tell them pilgrims a yarn if they want to live through the night, they'll circle their wagons, stock inside the circle, and keep weapons at the ready and a sharp lookout this night. You ought to have had sense enough to know that. How many wagon trains you ramrodded? This is my first, the man said stiffly. Preacher spat on the ground. Then whoever hired you was a goddamn fool. He walked back inside the fort. He found the young lieutenant, and the young man's manner had changed noticeably toward Preacher, probably due to talking with Richard and Edmund. Preacher put a hand on the young officer's shoulder. Son, he said, even though he was probably no more than 10 or 12 years older, I got to say this to you. You might feel hard towards me afterward, but I still got to do it. What you know about Injuns is mighty thin, about as thin as frog hair. You'll learn, but that ain't helping you none now. Them Blackfeet's gonna be back. If their medicine is good to 'em, it'll be tonight. Forget all that about Injuns not fighting at night. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. You're thinking war is a white man. Injuns don't think like us. Injuns think like Injuns.
I'm beginning to understand, sir. I feel rather like a fool not listening to Grable from the start. I'm afraid my behavior has been boorish, to say the least.
I don't know what that means, but I do know this. We got to get ready for an attack, and we ain't got a whole lot of time to get set.
Tell me what you want done, and it shall be done.
Fine. This is what we'll do.
Preacher left the lieutenant readying his troops, while he and Grable concentrated on the outside where both of them intended to be when the attack came. And both of them felt an attack was not far off. They helped hitch the teams and pull the wagons into a box, with the rear of the box against the walls of the fort.
Fill all your buckets and barrels, Preacher told the pilgrims. The Injuns will be sure to use fire arrows to set the canvas ablaze.
Our children? A woman asked.
Inside the fort if they'll go. If not, under the wagons we got in the center of this box. I can't believe y'all come all the way from the Big Muddy to here without no Injun fights.
The wagon masters all said we were very lucky, a pioneer stated.
Grable shook his shaggy head. Damn sure was that, he muttered. Like Preacher, the mountain man was loaded down with weapons, and after the wagons were in place, he and Preacher went off into the gathering gloom of evening to find a good spot from which to fight and to check their weapons.
The lieutenants took a liking to you, Preacher, Grable said, once the two had settled down near a wall. I bet he'd hire you on if you'd ask.
I ain't made up my mind, Preacher said. I never worked for nobody but me in all my life. I don't know how I'd be taking orders from fresh-faced kids.
It ain't so bad. The lieutenant the kid replaced was a real horse's butt, though. You'd have killed him for a fact. I damn near did.
What was his problem?
I just told you, he was a horse's butt.
Oh.
I say, gentlemen, Lieutenant Maxwell Smith said from above them. The mountain men looked up. The young officer was standing on the rampart looking down at them.
Get down, Smith, Preacher told him. Your noggin makes a dandy target all stuck up there. In case you ain't noticed, there's timber all around us. Speak through the gun slits.
Oh, yes, quite right. He ducked down out of sight. The missionaries you rescued speak highly of you, sir. But I must fill out a report concerning the wagon train attack and those ruffians following you. What is your Christian name?
I ain't got one. Preacher'll do just fine.
But are you a man of the cloth?
Graybull started giggling. Not likely, Lieutenant. I've been knowing him over 20 years and never knowed him to go to church yet. He scratched his head and frowned. Course, there ain't been no churches out here till recent. That might have something to do with it. Jefferson Maxwell Smith walked away, muttering under his breath. You didn't say nothing about no one following you, preacher, Cribble said. Bum Kelly and his gang. Jack Harris is hooked up with them, too.
Wow, that no count.
That ain't all. Preacher told Graybull about his suspicions of Jack deliberately leading the train north so Bum and his gang could ambush it. Graybull was thoughtful for a time.
That'd be a low thing for any man to do, preacher.
But Harris is that low, I reckon.
Reckon hell I know he is.
Yeah, it has to be like you say. Ain't no way even a fool like Jack Harris could get that far north of the trail.
Then, as night touched the wilderness around the fort and the wagons, Preacher set Graybull to chuckling when he told him about the antics in the cave.
He's got to kill you, Preacher, Bum and all the rest of them bad apples. It's a matter of honor now. They'll never give up. And I hope you ain't forgot that Bum has been in cahoots with Red Hand and his renegades more than one time in the past.
Preacher bit off a chew of twist he'd bought at the store.
I ain't forgot.
Both men tensed, then glanced at one another as the unnatural sound of silence settled around the fort. Nothing moved in the forest. No birds called.
There we go, Graybull muttered.
I warned the pilgrims to get ready, Preacher said.
See if you can get some soldier boy's attention and tell them to pass the word and get set.
Will do.
Preacher found the wagon master.
Get your people in place. The engines will be along shortly.
I've never been in an Indian attack before, he admitted. Preacher studied him closely in the faint light. The man was scared and showed it.
Where in the hell did you ever get the experience to be called a wagon master?
The man sold up and stuck his chin out. I drove a freight wagon out of Pittsburgh, he said defensively. I traveled all over Pennsylvania and Ohio. It's plenty wild back there, mister.
Oh, I know it is, Preacher said. I can just imagine. Engines on the warpath at every turn of the road. Get your people ready to fight.
He got back to Graybull and made himself comfortable on the ground.
How many men's the kid got under his command?
40. All green, 7 to senior sergeant. Just got to the coast by ship not 6 months ago. I think they come the long way round. Some of 'em still look sick.
They watched as several dark shapes flitted from stump to tree several hundred yards out.
Working in close, and then they'll jump us. You reckon they'll try to breach the walls?
That's the word I get. They gonna try to burn it down.
They want the fort and the soldiers and the Bostons gone from this country, and all these wagon trains coming in suddenly really got them mad.
Well, they better get over it. Them holy shouters I brought in told me folks was fixing to pour into this country like ants to honey.
You don't say.
I do. Thousands of people.
He shuddered at the thought.
Gonna be a lot of folks killed, too. I just can't understand how these folks come all the way from the muddy and didn't get set upon by engines.
A fire arrow lit the night as it soared up and then came down, missing a wagon by only a few feet. Several men jumped up and started to move to the flames.
Let it burn out. Get down, Preacher called. Don't show yourselves and save your powder and lead.
Was we that stupid when we come out here, Preacher?
Graybull asked, never taking his eyes from the area in front of their position.
No, because times was still wild where we came from. We growed up more cautious than these pilgrims. And do you know what else I learned from them soul savers?
What?
They's people in the big cities back east putting crappers in their houses.
You mean like a chamber pot?
No,
Well, I mean like a regular room where they go to take care of business.
Grable blinked.
You mean to tell me they shit in their house? Right next to where they sleep? I can't believe it.
That's what them folks told me. I think it's disgusting. Who'd want to do something like that?
Surely not me.
Well, I never heard of nothing like that in my life. And I bet they's some of them same people that say folks like you and me ain't civilized because we live in the mountains.
Tisk, tisk, tisk.
Look sharp now, Grable. They's working closer. See that stump over yonder? It wasn't there 2 minutes ago.
You're right. You want the honors?
I believe I will.
Preacher pulled his hawk into his shoulder, took careful aim, and let her bang. The stump grunted when the ball struck him. A war axe went flying up into the air, and the brave fell forward and lay still.
Here they come,
Gray Bull roared, and the fight was on. 11. The Indians became darting shapes in the night, utilizing every bit of cover as they worked their way closer to the fort and the wagons. So far, although 24 shots had been fired from the defenders, Preacher was the only one to have scored a hit.
Don't fire until you're sure of a target, Preacher yelled. God damn it, save your powder and shot. This ain't St. Louis. You can't go to the store and buy more.
He dropped back down beside Gray Bull.
Damn pilgrims, anyways. I'd hate to be saddled with guiding them fools.
Another fire arrow lanced the night, and this one landed on the canvas of a wagon, igniting it almost instantly. Gray Bull drilled the Indian who fired the arrow, and the brave doubled over, mortally wounded from the 54 caliber Hawken. Men and women ran to put out the fire, and the Indians showered them with arrows. One woman was struck in the throat and died horribly, the life gurgling out of her. And a man went down screaming with an arrow in his stomach. Children were laying under their parents' wagons, many of them screaming in fright.
Welcome to life on the frontier, folks,
Preacher muttered without malice.
I expect it ain't at all like the big adventure it was painted to be.
They're using ladders to breach the north wall,
a young soldier shouted.
Did you tell the kitchen people to have lots of boiling water ready?
Preacher asked his buddy. Gray Bull chewed and spat.
Yep.
Well,
the lieutenant said he wouldn't do nothing like pouring no boiling water on folks. Said that was again the rules of war.
Until that boy grows up, we're going to be in trouble, Gray Bull.
Yep. Must be 200-300 Blackfeet out yonder.
Both men were lifting their rifles to their shoulders.
At least, Preacher said.
Wait a minute,
Gray Bull said, lowering his rifle.
What the hell's that chanting?
Preacher listened for a moment.
Them back over that ridge is singing their death songs.
But why?
And why the rush to attack us? Ain't none of this making no sense, Gray Bull.
From out in the darkness, far away from the light of the burning wagon, came the angry shouting voice of a Blackfoot. Gray Bull and Preacher listened intently to the hard words.
My sweet Jesus, Gray Bull whispered. Is he saying what I think I'm hearing?
Yeah,
Preacher told him, his words hard and grimly offered.
He damn sure is.
Preacher tapped on the logs of the wall.
Can anybody hear me in yonder? He called.
Right here, Preacher.
A trapper he knew slightly said,
I heard them words, too.
Get to using an axe, Jim. Get some men chopping and make us a space big enough to get folks through and do it quick. And get the lieutenant over here.
Right, Preacher.
Only a few heartbeats passed before the voice of Maxwell Smith came through the logs.
Yes, Preacher.
Now listen to me, Lieutenant,
Preacher said, steel in his words.
I ain't gonna say this but once. Don't let no engine come over the walls. Don't touch none of 'em. We got to get all these pilgrims inside the walls and keep the engines out. Now you get them goddamn pots filled with water and keep it hot. When they try to come over, you dump it on 'em. You got all that, Lieutenant?
I hear you, Preacher. boiling water poured on the flesh of those poor wretches out there. But can you give me a reason for the barbaric behavior?
Them's their death songs they singing out yonder, boy. The white man's done brought smallpox down on them. Whole villages has been wiped out, and them out yonder got it too. They want to die in battle, but not before they infect us. Now, is that good enough for you?
I'll get right on it, Maxwell Smith said, his voice filled with horror.
You do that. He turned to Gray Bull. Them on the other side'll be through in two jigs. Soon as the hole's cut. I'll start working them pilgrims over here. We gotta do this fast. He handed him his Hawking. Little extra firepower, Gray Bull. I'm gone.
The wagon was almost burned down to smoldering char as Preacher made his way into the knot of men and women.
They're through,
Gray Bull called. Get to the wall, Preacher told the first bunch. Grab what you can and run like hell. Move, people, move. What's the meaning of this? The wagon master confronted him. I give the orders out here.
Not no more, partner, Preacher told him. If you want to live, you do what I tell you to do.
I don't take orders from you, you smelly, shaggy reprobate.
Then you can go right straight to hell, Preacher replied. I ain't got the time to fart around with someone as dumb as you.
He shoved the man out of the way. The wagon master grabbed him by the shoulder and spun Preacher around, his fist drawn back for a blow.
He never got the chance to throw it.
Preacher put him on the ground butt first and a hard left and right to the jaw. Then he went about his business of gathering up those pioneers who would go into the fort. And not all of them would.
I don't believe you, one man said, and I'm not leaving my wagon out here for the savages to plunder and burn.
Then stay here, Preacher said, and pushed past him. It was cold on the mountain man's part, but he was doing what he felt was necessary, and he didn't have much time. And he also knew what smallpox could do. He'd had it, then survived it, as had Gray Bull. They'd been with some Mandans when it struck their village, and it was a horrible sight to witness. About half of those in the wagon train chose to leave their wagons and run for the fort. Preacher held several sets of parents at pistol point while Gray Bull and two young soldiers forcibly took their young children from them and ran for the fort.
I'll see you in hell for this, the man shouted.
You'll be there for me, Preacher told him. Then the enraged Blackfeet struck the fort and there was no time for anything except survival, as the infected and sick and dying Indians threw themselves against the thick walls of the fort. They came out of the night in silent waves of fury and hate. The first wave was repelled by shot. On the heels of that one came another with makeshift ladders. Boiling water was poured on them and they ran shrieking into the night, burned horribly. Those pilgrims who had refused to leave their wagons fared not well at all. It did not take the Blackfeet long to overwhelm them, and the Indians were in no mood to take prisoners for slavery or barter. The screaming of those being tortured played hell on the nerves of the defenders inside the fort.
What are they doing to them? Edmund asked nervously, standing beside Preacher on a rampart.
Injuns can get right lively with their torture, the mountain man replied. And if they're a mind to, they can make it last for days. Each tribe has its own favorite way of torture, and there ain't none of it very pleasant.
What happened to the tame Indians who were living around the fort?
They run off before the Blackfeet got here in force. Flames from the burning wagons illuminated the night, highlighting the bodies that littered the ground around the walled fort. Moaning from the wounded mingled with the screaming of those being tortured. A man from the wagon train came stumbling out of the night, his head on fire and his hands tied behind his back. His shrieking was hideous. Preacher lifted his Hawking and shot him dead.
My God, man, Edmund said.
I put him out of his misery, Preacher said. They'd gouged out his eyes and set his hair on fire. You ever see a man whose brains was cooked?
Ah, no.
It ain't a nice sight.
An arrow whizzed between them and fell to the earth on the grounds inside the walls.
When we whip them, Preacher said, and we will do that eventually, we got a real problem. Those of us that's had the pox has got to go out there and burn them bodies to kill the germs. You been scratched, Edmund?
Yes. All of my party received the cowpox.
Good. Y'all can help then. Hudson's Bay sent supplies of smallpox vaccine to all its forts. The lieutenant said his people had been vaccined. Grable came hunched over to him. From what I've been able to pick out of the night, the Blackfeet's lost a lot of people. Whole villages wiped out. A Mandan just slipped through, and he's saying that all along the Missouri there ain't nothing but death. His whole tribe was wiped out. He says that folks is running away from it heading west, and that's how it got here so fast. He says that people of his tribe is killing themselves right and left. Said the talk is it started over at Fort Union, brought in by someone on a keelboat.
Preacher nodded his head.
Listen to that, he said, as the chanting and singing grew louder, coming to them from out of the night. Them Blackfeet's gone crazy. They're working themselves up into a killing rage.
Can't say as I blame them, Grable replied.
I'd rather die quick than linger in pain for days with the pox, having the skin rot off me.
Edmund shuddered.
You are rather graphic in your description, sir.
He paused.
A thought just occurred to me. Those savages we encountered the night before we reached the fort. Do you suppose?
Yeah, they probably had it. Or suspected they did. But you all been vaccinated, so you ain't got nothing to worry about. What you got to worry about is right out yonder.
The singing and chanting stopped. The sudden silence gathered all around them.
What does that mean? Edmund asked.
It means they coming straight at us, Preacher said. Like right about now.
He lifted his hawken and blew a hole in the chest of a running brave. The ground on all sides of the fort was suddenly transformed into a mass of charging Blackfeet, some of them carrying makeshift ladders. They threw ladders against the log walls and began climbing up. Buckets and pots containing hot water were dumped on the Indians, scalding them. They flung themselves off the ladders, screaming in pain, running away into the night. Men were firing straight down from the ramparts, the heavy caliber rifles and pistols inflicting horrible damage on the Indians at close range. The cool night air became thick and choking with gun smoke and the stench of death. Although outnumbered by at least 20-1, and probably more than that, the defenders of the fort held the high ground, so to speak, and fought savagely, once again breaking the Indian attack. Lieutenant Maxwell Smith made his way along the ramparts to Preacher.
While it is quiet, I am going to stand half of my men down for a rest and some tea.
Good idea. They damn sure earned a rest. He complimented the young officer. We just might have broken their spirit this last charge. Them Blackfeet might think their medicine has turned bad and fall back to ponder on it some.
I'll have the men in the towers keep a sharp eye out.
Preacher watched the young man leave and said,
I think he learned something about the frontier this night.
Edmund mopped his grimy, sweaty face with a handkerchief.
I know, I certainly did.
Most of those inside the fort managed to catch an hour or so of sleep that night. The Indians made no more charges against them. They settled back to harass them with arrows and an occasional gunshot, for many of them did not have rifles, and those that did were not very good shots, not having sufficient powder and shot to practice. The sun rose to a sight of mangled bodies on all sides of the fort. More than a dozen of those men and women who had refused to leave their wagons had been stripped naked, tortured, then tied to a wagon wheel and burned alive. Even the children had been killed, a sure sign of the Indians' rage over the white man bringing his deadly diseases to them.
I expect we can salvage about half them wagons, Preacher opined.
He glanced at Richard, looking out grim-faced at the carnage that lay before them.
Any clothing found out yonder'll have to be handled careful-like, with a stick, and boiled for anyone uses it.
Yes. Have the Indians gone?
I don't know. I doubt it. Mad as they is, I don't expect they'll give up too easy.
He was studying the body of a Blackfoot that lay on the ground at the base of the walled fort.
Cut his claws off, Preacher muttered, just as Grable walked over to them. You notice that, Grable?
What?
Them Blackfeet done cut their claws off for this battle.
Strange.
Claws? Richard asked. Claws like in animal claws?
Thumbnails, Preacher explained. Blackfeet men let their thumbnails grow until they crook like a claw.
Something else, too.
See them dead ponies out yonder? Look at the symbols painted on the necks. Them's the ponies of war party leaders. We just may have broke this bunch. They pulled way back now, busy electing new chiefs and leaders.
Preacher glanced to his left. Lieutenant Maxwell Smith was standing silently, watching him and listening intently. The young officer had learned many things during the past 24 hours. One important thing was that these disreputable-looking mountain men knew what they were talking about when it came to Indians and how to fight them. And if he was going to survive out here among the savage heathens, he'd better shut his mouth and listen and learn.
You done just fine, Lieutenant, Preacher told him.
The young officer smiled through the grime that covered his face, most of it residue from the black powder of pistols and rifles.
Thank you, Preacher, for a lot of things.
He smiled again, and it made him look very, very young. I'm afraid that Sandhurst did not adequately prepare me for life on the American frontier.
This is a land and a people that nobody else can learn you, Lieutenant, Preacher said. It's just so damn big out here.
Yes, the officer said, stepping closer and speaking quietly. I was quite awed by the vastness of it. I still am. England pales by comparison, although I wouldn't want the men to hear me say that.
Let's get a report from the men in the towers, Grable said. Then we gotta make plans about dragging off and burning them bodies out yonder and rounding up all the pioneer stock that run off. We gotta see who all ain't been vaccinated against the pox and get the company doctor to fix them up.
I'm ahead of you there, Preacher, Maxwell Smith said. I've already canvassed the group and the doctor is preparing to scratch people now.
Good, good. Preacher clasped the man on the arm and was not surprised to find it heavily muscled. Let's go see what the lookouts can tell us.
They're still out there, the only senior sergeant in the garrison reported. Over those ridges. See the faint smoke. He pointed. But none of us can detect any movement in the woods near the fort.
You wouldn't be able to, Preacher said. And I ain't casting no doubts on your soldiering abilities by saying that. Injuns is the greatest fighters and hiders and ambushers in the world. Settlers down in the southwest tell a story about an Apache who found himself out in the desert with no place to run, and the army coming hard up the trail. That Injun wasn't 20 feet from what passed for a road. Well, he just laid down on the sand and didn't move, and he blended right in. Problem was, he didn't figure on 2 patrols back to back. When he got up, the second patrol was topping the rise, and they shot him dead. Out here, be scared when you see Injuns. Be twice as scared when you can't.